Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. So what's an MVP? Is it the most valuable player? Not in the world of startups. In the world of startups, MVP is often referred to as minimum viable product. There's other iterations. Sometimes I find myself calling it a minimally viable product. It's all the same thing, but really, in the end, it's a great place to start. It's a mentality and an approach to developing software, developing products that many, many, many success stories have begun with. That's what we're going to talk about today. Now, before we get into that, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. You need to build an MVP. You already got an MVP. Let us help. We're going to help you scale your team up and help you do it quickly and affordably. With me today, I've got Marcelo Russo. Marcelo is the COO and creative technologist at Qroom. You want to learn more about Qroom, go to qroom.biz. They're straight out of Miami, Florida. Once again, Qroom is a team of entrepreneurs and tech experts in Miami that provides complete turnkey solutions for those looking to turn mobile app dreams into reality. Marcelo, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Matt, thank you very much. Super happy for being here.
Yeah, and I like to say no one tells a story better than COOs, CEOs, founders, and the people that make it happen. So why don't you give us a little bit of backstory about you and Qroom?
Absolutely. Qroom is a very interesting, and I think it's going to be a great topic for our conversation about MVP. We started about 10 years ago in Argentina, where I'm originally from, and With my first co-founder, we started working as a software factory, very traditional model, building products and software for other people. And slowly but surely, we moved into a creative agency. We added some creative talents and we pivoted that, embracing the needs of our customers. And I would say after I moved into the US and discovered the wonders that this country has to offer and the super, super broad ecosystem of entrepreneurs, we moved into creative technologies where there's this beautiful, amazing blend of creating awesome products that stand out, that they are really the unicorns. And I think that's where we are right now. We will see what the market says in a few years.
Yeah. And there's a whole lot to be said about making people's dreams come true. I find that I consider myself to be a creative person. And I know that a lot of people don't. And, a lot of people don't think I'm creative. A lot of people don't think they are creative. And that's a big obstacle to overcome, especially when building something from scratch. So I think most of the times people in general, they look at anything they look at and they assume that it was always what it was. And I think the reality is most things, even the greatest things that you're aware of or the things that you use every day, usually started probably looking like crap. Rickety, held together with popsicle sticks and string and Elmer's glue and stuff like that. And look, people, don't begin to think that some of the greatest products you experience and some of the greatest software and some of the greatest technology also wasn't held together with popsicle strings and Elmer's glue. And that's really, in many ways, what a minimum viable product is. Now, I told you before I hit record that I actually have begun to abandon the term MVP for MLP, minimum lovable product. And, whether you want to call it an MVP, and I believe you have a term for it as well. What was that?
Yeah, I mean, we call it the minimum awesome product.
I like that it says MAP, because that's actually maybe a better acronym, because that's exactly what you're trying to create with an MVP, an MAP, whatever we want to say, with your very first thing. So when you think about and what is an MVP, what comes to mind?
So there, I will separate it in two parts. Like for me personally, when I'm thinking of MVPs, I'm thinking of that minimum thing that will validate that I'm in the right path. That first step on the set of stairs, a flight of stairs. And I've seen it time and again that the more I get my head around that, as you were saying, right, the product that looks perfect, that feels perfect, that has all the features that you want, it really took several MVPs. Each function, each feature has carefully been built towards getting to the point that we know them today. So I try to put my ego aside, to put my fears aside, and I think, this is the minimum thing that I need to know to see if this is going to work.
Putting this stuff out there to try to get public validation and feedback. And that's the main thing. There's been so many quotes from uber famous people that basically say, if you don't look back at your very first release with total fear later, then you hung on to it too long.
Yeah. And People sometimes, what I've seen, being from Latin America, there's a lot of getting things done really fast and cheaply. You are using the term, with popsicle sticks. So we are very, very accustomed to it. It's like we say, we put it together with duct tape or something. And the reality ends up being that that's the way that it works on the first time. But coming from a creative point of view for us, we also hear a lot of people that underestimate the necessity of making it look functional, of having a hypothetical user experience to validate. I think that one of the MVPs that will always be a fantastic way of doing it is when you tick many boxes at the same time of different areas. Like, it's not only, validating that the product will reach market fit eventually, but also that it looks the way that the people are expecting, and that it behaves the way the people would be expecting. And they are all different areas, right? That it's feasible for marketing, that it's feasible for the sales team. And depending on where you're going, right, all of the users need to get at least one validation. I think that Eric Rice is one of the people that say it best, right, with the term of validating each hypothesis. Well, you don't need 10 hypotheses on the same area, but you do need to try to run as many different area hypothesis at the same time as possible. And I think that's what sets apart a good MVP.
Yeah. And you're referencing Eric Ries, the author of Lean Startup, I believe. Kind of a funny story if we're talking about MVPs. I released my book, Million Dollar Bedroom, the same week that came out. So I hit number one in every other category but startups.
Competing with
startup guy. Yeah, I kind of launched that. So my MVP of a book. That was. I always think that's funny. I sent Eric a note about that. So you got to kind of chuckle it and laugh at yourself in one regards. People said that to me. They're like, "How come your book was in all these number one and rose to number one in all these categories except for startups? Aren't you a startup guy?" I'm like, "Yeah, but when the startup guy releases a book about it, that's a problem." So when you release your first release, you get it out there, You know, there's a couple things, and I want to put this in context. So I think a lot of people are terrified to put these first things out, and they say, well, I don't want everyone to see it, and it looks like crap. If whatever you're building is going to get really, really big, that first layer or level of people that are going to see it are going to end up being like a fraction, like 0.01% of total users. So no one's going to care. It's like, you know, a few people in there. If it makes you feel better, put a beta label on it or something. Now, when you, the importance is you want to get feedback. And you mentioned something about ego in the beginning. Ego is tough for us as entrepreneurs and founders because, I mean, we're right all the time, aren't we? We always have the next best thing, and we know all of it. So why do we need feedback? But really, in the end, you're right. You do have to put your ego in check and start listening. And with that, I like to listen for the echo. You can't chase every single bit of feedback that someone gives you, but when it starts to sound like an echo and you get the same feedback over and over and over and over again, well, they might be onto something. Is that something that you look for as well? Or is there something else that really, that you look for to stand out in that first release?
I'm actually going to steal the term, listen for the echo. It's really, really good. A fantastic analogy to exactly what needs to happen, right? It's like, the first part is like you're correct with the analysis that the entrepreneur is always looking for their own validation. Like, we know best, we are the best, and that's why we have the grit and the resilience to overcome failures and overcome negative feedback. But there's a moment where we need to go from we are the best to we need to listen to our audience, and that's the echo moment. Normally, I prefer relying on data. And if I don't have the capacity, or the company is already trying to do something nationwide or sometimes even statewide with, you know, being a solo founder or something, I try to make sure that I look at the analytics, I put a heat map, I see how people are using each and every portion of the application, and when possible, have an interview face to face. And that's where I check for the echo. Validating those first iterations and showing the speed of an MVP iteration, I think that's what makes it stand out. It's not going to be doing it right the first time. It's being nimble to keep improving fast.
Yeah, and one of the key, when you mentioned nimble and fast, so I've been, over the last few years, I've had this fascination with what makes people considered to be a genius. And there's, you know, about two dozen traits that most, quote, geniuses have, but one of them is that they're not afraid to move fast and break things. And you're going to end up shattering every bit of your first iteration. Like, if you make it 2 years, you'll find that very little of your original creation will still exist, because you will have redone it, replaced it, whatever. So move fast and get in there. But the key thing is especially if, you know, anytime you start a new business or a new venture, resources are at a premium. So you want to get that out and get that feedback in there fast, and not spend time, energy, emotion, money, all of it building stuff that people aren't going to end up using. I've made this mistake before. I was like, I did it with Gigabook, one of the software platforms I'm the founder of. And, you know, we overbuilt it. And we didn't want to promote it, because we're like, it has this shortcoming. Look, 8 years later, I realize there's always shortcomings. There's no such thing as a business without problems, and there's no such thing as software without bugs. Those are the two things that I've learned in over a decade of being an entrepreneur. But those are, you know, so with that, I hope to give some of you confidence. Now, meaning like put it out there, just better to put it out there. There's also something refreshing about it. And then if you're trying to raise capital, having anything that looks tangible is way easier to get investors to rally around than having nothing and an idea on a piece of paper. Now, you mentioned talking about data and looking for certain things. Let's be a little more specific about that. What are some of the data points that you think are important that people measure? And feel free to shape it around. I know you guys are more into mobile app development. So if that's the context that makes sense, I'll maybe add some other stuff behind it. But what are the data points that you really look for? I know you mentioned a heat map. I would imagine another one would be like engagement, or, you know, if they actually come back and use it again. But
yeah, and I think that there are different level of the indicators or KPIs that you can look into, depending on your application, right? I mean, if you're doing a game and your hypothesis is that a game needs to be played and you design it to look for people playing it a couple minutes or several minutes, you'll need to look for not only the retention of having people coming back, but actually getting the experience that you have your hypothesis in. And installs, of course, normally is one of those that that VCs really care, right? Monthly growth, returning users, customer acquisition. So tracking all of the channels of your end-to-end sales pipeline, from where you are doing the, what's the cost of acquisition per channel, rate of installs, rate of uninstalls, those churn rates are going to always be really, really important. But in the early stage, you're trying to validate a particular hypothesis. There are a lot of tools in the mobile industry that give you already KPIs that are built out. My suggestion is always start fresh at the beginning. Grab your Google Analytics, make sure that you put it there, make sure that you create the events that you need to create, and build it from there. You'll get the time to implement something more specific, more powerful, once you are in the next phases of your, whether you're in your pre-seed, seed A, round A or whatever, you'll get it. You'll get the time and the money to invest in that. But you won't be able to make that step if you don't know how are you explaining with data the validation of your hypothesis.
So if we pause for a moment and examine the why of what Marcelo just said, I mean, really the what you're wanting to do is cultivate all that. Like I mentioned earlier, you're listening for the echo, but it's so you can begin to develop your product roadmap and determine what improvements are worth making. Because here's the thing is you have to, you know, when it comes to all this stuff, like your why is you're building it for your users, not for yourself. So if you're building something that they don't want or they don't like, you're headed in the wrong direction.
And that's very powerful and very truth. And that's part of the ego that we were talking before, right? It's like you had the idea, you love your idea, but the people that really need to love it and really need to be listening is your users. That's where your pivot comes. That's where your returning users will come and so on. And sometimes, if we all remember the story of Facebook, it started as FaceMash. So it's pretty far away from the social media mogul that is right now, and that empire of communication. So you need to listen to the people. And however many ears you can keep on the ground, keep close to your application, it's hard. It's hard. I know the fear of the entrepreneurs when they see the metric not going up as they expect, when the user experience is not being followed exactly as they designed it, and you see their entire team seeing that number, that line, that drop off. But that's okay. That's what you're expecting to see from that friction and from that pain. That's where the iteration will come. And it's not that anybody is less intelligent because of that. It's maybe the user base that you were thinking looks like a particular way, it doesn't. And user personas are one of those fantastic tools to map all of those ideas.
Yeah, and that's where the data will surprise you sometimes, because I've done this myself. You're like, oh, I think we're going to get this. And that's going to be, when you say user data, that's going to be age, income, industry, things like that. And that can really begin to shape the product going forward, because you may find that these things, what they taught us in science class in fourth grade, you know, create a hypothesis, and that's kind of what you're doing. And then you're testing it. And the thing is if you're wrong, you're wrong. Like, get past it. I'm going to keep impressing the ego thing, because I think you hit a very, very powerful thing. Because often as founders in an early stage, you know, we have this vision and it's hard for us to deviate from it because we don't want to admit we're wrong or we just think it's something different. But in the end, you build it for the users, you build it for the people that are going to pay for it. Other, if you don't, it's just a hobby because no one's going to use it, or you, or it's only going to be you that uses it. So once again, with me today, I've got Marcelo Russo. He's the COO and creative technologist at Qroom. Go to qroom.biz. There's a link in the show notes to learn more about him. Today's episode of the show is brought to you by fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. We're talking about building MVPs and how to create a great one. So, you know, one of the things, Marcelo, that I've become really obsessed with is onboarding. And if I had to go back, I currently have no desire to build a new software venture myself. I prefer helping other people scale theirs at this point. But I think one of the most important things, if you want to get these metrics up, is if it's difficult to sign up or to sign in to your MVP, no one's going to get in it.
Yeah, and you're talking about one of those fantastic dichotomies on what we were just talking before, right? Get the most information you can so you can properly validate your idea while not bothering the users. You need them to go lightning fast. They need to be on the application. They need to be yesterday. So there are several different little things that can be done. There are great tools that leverage aggregated features from the internet and from the user behavior to create forms that require little information, and they aggregate it for you, and then you laterally obtain that information. But also on the other hand, if you need a lot of that information, that goes to your particular hypothesis. And we were talking a little bit before about the user personas, and with the acronym MAT for the minimum awesome product, right? I look to map the value of everything that we are analyzing in our hypothesis. And the best way to iterate is understand, okay, this is the point where I failed with this hypothesis. This was the variable, the value that was wrong, and I'm going to tweak it and see what's the new hypothesis that is being generated. And mapping a particular value from a user persona, if we think that we need to know how many dogs a person have when you are building a software as a service to give you video recommendations, well, that's your current hypothesis. How are you going to validate it? And if you need to ask that as a question and that becomes a threshold, a barrier, a drop-off, then you're already getting the answer. Maybe your hypothesis of needing the information of the user is wrong because they are telling you, I don't consider valuable for me to give you this information because you're not going to give me that return. And that's where you ask the question, how do I give you the value, or how do I live without it?
Yeah, there's a couple little tricks I've learned along the way too. So you look at something like a lot of times, whether it's a web app, mobile app or whatever, we often want to ask people what their address is. And the very last bottom right field is zip code. I learned if you ask that first, you can actually satisfy about a whole lot of other fields. You know someone's time zone, you know their city, you know their area code, you know their currency. You got a whole lot of different stuff in there. So sometimes if you position things, you have to think a little differently. Because like I said, it's easy to just want to put an address form in there. I'm not going to mail you anything, so I don't need all that. But sometimes we want to collect that info anyway. But like I said, if you give a little thoughtful purpose into what you're asking for, like I said, it can oftentimes fill in a whole lot of other stuff, so you don't have to re-ask. Those are just some of the simple things. And then there's like a gazillion tools out there that let people sign into your app just with one click of a button. And I think that those are the ones that, you know, the one-time authentication, Google, Facebook, whatever it is. I think that the easier you make it for people to sign up and sign in, the more signups and sign-ins you're going to get. Is that what you find with the stuff that you've been building for clients?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a proliferation of different applications that do the one click, from the single sign-on with Google and Facebook for one-click purchases from Amazon. Recently, Fast Company. Well, Fast Company is a company, actually. Sorry, guys. Fast, it's a company that gives one-click checkout for people, has got to market, and it's fantastic, too. So the one-click is one end of the spectrum. But you were mentioning that there's also a lot of items that can happen and a lot of information that can be gathered after the fact. Just by asking for one particular information, then your backend can do all the magic and give you the information. And one of the things that has been really, really prominent in the last COVID year was everything has to do with no code and low code. Fantastic tools like one of the ones that we use, which is Webflow, gives you an easy access to the front end. The Bubble is a tool to create no code backends. Zapier creates the integrations and the glue that sends information. So from that point of view, not everything is manpower, not everything is development power that you need. Sometimes you just need to sit down and research the information that you want and make sure that you can connect it. If I get the zip code, you don't need to necessarily go and do the implementation of Google Maps. So you get a fantastic autocomplete. Maybe, as you were saying, Matt, you get the zip code, you store it, and then you do the business intelligence yourself by using that information and connecting it with something else.
Yeah, and you were mentioning low code, and I'm glad you mentioned Zapier, because Zapier is probably most quote tech people's first interaction with the true low code. So I want to seg this into like buy or build, because so much about creating an MVP is about not overbuilding. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't bring this up, but everything that you do, you can put together a Franken app of sorts, like things that are just like, when I say buy versus build, like I'll give you an example. Like Typeform is something I've been using. Go to typeform.com. I have no affiliation with Typeform. I just like their data collection, and it's an easy user interface that I don't have to develop, and I can change it on the fly and a lot of that. And that's an example. And for, $50 a month, I can collect 10,000 forms. And if you're trying to build an MVP, you can piece a lot of these things together and plug them in. That are still like Typeform collects data better, faster, and connects to more things than I would want to build myself. So sometimes that's okay. Now in certain cases, you do want to make sure that if what you've created has no proprietary value to it at all, you're going to have to make it have some proprietary value if it's ever going to be worth anything. But your MVP doesn't have to be that way. It can, I think anytime you can find something great to plug in and you get it to market faster, you cross put checkbox off and move it in, so when it comes to buy versus build, how do you begin to think about that? Or what are some things that you've used that are great?
My first one, Nick, I was laughing because I always try to put myself in the global perspective. Right. And when you think that your idea is truly unique, we just got to remember that we have how many? I think we are right now 7 billion people on the planet, 7.5 billion.
It's probably not unique. Yeah.
Exactly. There's for sure at least one more person thinking about it. And one of the things that in my past life, I was part of a committee to accept startups inside an incubator. And that also required us to do a lot of digging, right, on failed startups, on failed moments. And it's always there's this serendipity of the moment when you are doing it, right? You do it 1 year early, maybe you're too soon. You do it 1 year later, and there's already competition. So humbling yourself to your idea is the first part. Well, the next one is just making sure that you're hitting the idea where it needs to happen, right? You think of what needs to be done and how it needs to be done, and you choose your constraints, budgetary. I mean, buy or build, normally if you buy it, you need to pay for it. Paying for it increase your basic cost of your startup. But definitely building it, it will last for you. So normally, circling back to our experience with several entrepreneurs, has to be, is this what you're outsourcing, your proprietary technology? Is this what you're going to put a patent on it in a few years because you got your unicorn right here? And one of the great ways of conversation I use is a Socratic method that my business coach told me. And it's like, if you think that's your proprietary idea, would you put those $20,000 to or more to trademark it so nobody steals it? If you are hesitant, maybe that's not your proprietary idea. And as you were saying, Matt, maybe that's the part where people need to think, how can I make this about the value that I'm providing? If not, sure, let's go buy it. Let's go build it fast. There's probably the other side, some other portion of what you want to build is your proprietary idea, is that thing that you don't want people to steal or replicate.
Yeah, and so I'll throw this into context, and I use the example of Typeform. So like $50 a month, 10,000 forms. I use that now for onboarding into the proprietary system that Fullscale uses to manage 220 developers worldwide and our clients and all that. That part I care about. The forms on the way in, oh man, that's done a long time ago. So for $50 a month, like that's difficult to build it better, faster, or cheaper than that. And also, I don't even get 10,000 forms in. Like, so for $50 a month, I'll let that part, and it still connects to the rest of our platform, our database, all that. So for $50 a month, I'm perfectly happy paying that. So we can then put our development resources on other things that are a little more important, that are a little more germane to the business that we're doing, and the things that are in fact the things we do really care about controlling, a data collection form not being one of them. You know, like I said, and that's that. These are little things, and we're well past MVP. So sometimes, I mean, you can always look at the buy versus build, like, and I think that, like you said, I'm so happy you said that. Look, folks, your idea isn't the first, and it probably isn't unique. And I'm not trying to sound like a shithead when I say that, but there's almost 8 billion people on the planet, that maybe 7, 8, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows anymore. But, you know, I say this a lot because people show up and they're like, hey, I don't have any competition. Either you're wrong about that, or there's no market for it. Because if there's a market for it, someone's probably out there doing it. Here in 2021, truly unique, fresh, uncompetitive ideas. I mean, okay, now 20 years ago in software, those were a lot easier because people hadn't done all of it. But man, it's out there, it's everywhere. So if you think you don't have any competition, I want to really, really encourage you to look harder. And if you look and you can't find anyone, call me, because then I'll back you. But it's tough to find new fresh ideas. So all right. So when it comes to like an MVP and all this, let's say I come to Q Room and I'm saying, hey, I've got this unique idea. Do you work helping people figure out if it is unique or how to make it unique, or sometimes delivering them the bad news that it isn't?
Yeah, so luckily I have two other co-founders that they are a little bit more lenient than I am with the analysis of the idea. My background in IT and my experience letting companies inside accelerator programs makes me have that I call it the spider sense. You know, it's like whenever I'm hearing a founder talk or I hear the idea, I'm lucky enough to still be around in the circles with a lot of VCs, and I hear what the pitches that they are receiving and helping them validate technical ideas. So it's very likely that I've heard something similar or in the same space or in the same realm. And as you were saying, Matt, it's very, very rare the moment when you find that truly unique, transcendent idea. It's a lot more about the personality of the entrepreneur, the space that he has experience with. And in the end, I'm the guy that tells them, yes, your idea has not necessarily the value that you're expecting. But there's a lot of moments where Qrum has done investment in different companies in different capacities because the idea and the entrepreneur are there and they need just some refinement. They need that initial hypothesis. So we are from Latin America, and one of my goals in life is to democratize a little bit more the access to American capital to the LATAM companies. So there's a lot of great ideas and great talent that are ready to change the world in many, many aspects. But sometimes the impact is not for the US. Sometimes the impact is for Latin American countries or Latin American economies. And understanding how a company like Qrum can partner with them and help them grow, we become their advisors, we become their initial funders, we become their lead investors, whatever sometimes it's needed. Personally, I enjoy a lot being in their advisory board because that's the place where the founder becomes vulnerable. If you generate that relationship of trust, we have a lot of those conversations as we were having about ego, about where is the market and how to tap that market that they want to find. And I get to help them grow. I get to be able to tell them, look, this is my experience. This is how we can do it. But then go validate more. Validate with other people. I'm not the source of truth by any mean, but I just have experience. Go validate it for yourself. This is an idea on how to do it.
Yeah, I think my last comment on the unique thing is if you do have a truly unique idea, it won't stay unique for long if it's any good. I wrote about that in Million Dollar Better. I mean, if you're even remotely successful, you've sent up a signal flare that's going to attract competition, and that gets moving really fast.
And that's
really
a perfect
does.
Circle with the MVP.
Yeah.
Because right now, between no code, low code, the experience of different companies, the democratization of access to technology, the democratization of access to capital right now, you used to have to go up and down Sand Hill Road in Silicon Valley to try to get some capital. Right now, you can just hop on Twitter, do a couple Zooms, and get a few checks. So the access to capital has been extremely democratized over the last year and a half. And the speed at which your unique idea is becoming less unique is astounding. It's the moment where you need truly that MVP. You need truly those partners that know the no code and low code space and make sure that your unique idea gets to market faster than it was 2 years ago.
What's your best advice for getting it out fast? I mean, I know we've kind of talked about that for the last 35 minutes here, but as we kind of, we raced right through this episode and there's, we've done, and for those of you listening, we've got a couple other similar related episodes. If you go back and look through the feed, some of it's more along the lines of designing and product roadmap and just stuff like kind of getting that first thing out there. But I mean, I'll give some advice first. And I think Nike said it best, just do it. Having written 3 books, I find that a lot of people want to talk to me about writing books. They never want to talk about my books. They want to talk about writing books. And, I find that to be really interesting. And they're like, yeah, I've been working on this for like 10 years, but I had this idea forever. What do I need to do to get started? I'm like, go home and write something.
And just
just start, just do it.
I've been, this one hits close to home because I've been helping my wife launch her own business several times. And my wife, I treat her in this when we are working with it as another entrepreneur in my ecosystem. And for me, it's a very humbling experience because I need to balance letting her make the mistakes so she can learn versus, well, it's my wife. I don't want her to fail. So the experience with it is there are so many tools. You need first and foremost a circle of people that understand your idea and some people that are technically savvy to help you find the right tools to do it fast and validate fast. you don't need, do you need a super fancy website like the ones that we create with the animations and interactions and Lottie files? Well, maybe you don't for day one. You'll need it eventually. But your first one can be a simple social media post if you're selling something connected to Gumroad and just sell it. Try your sales pitch. Create your copy while talking to people and make sure that you practice that, that you send that to them. So that's definitely one of the key things. It's like, know the tools that you have at your disposal and just get out there. Just do it.
Yeah. And that's the, I think that's great advice too. And just a little reference, you know, we have quite a few episodes about finding co-founders and working with people. You know, Marceau, 15 years ago, I wanted to do it all alone. 15 years later, like, if, you know, I'm glad to have co-founders. And there's a lot to be said about not going at it alone and getting the right people around you. Sometimes just having a, you know, like working in pairs often generates better results. And, you know, like that's programmers to do that. You often hear programming pairs and people that are working with each other because sometimes it's easy to get too close to it. And, you know, it's like, so I remember once when I was like 24 and I had been working at a place for a couple of years and I didn't get promoted to be manager the way that I wanted. And I called my dad and I was really shitty about it. And he said, son, right now you feel like a door got slammed in your face. He goes, you need to take a step back and look around and make sure that you're not in a hallway full of open doors or other doors to knock on. And that's that, but that's where the pairs and the others and someone else to solve problems with you. Finding someone that's good at the things that you're not good at, in my opinion, is the crucial part of that. I don't know if I could work with another version of me, which is okay. You know, I'm good at specific things like at Full Scale. And once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by fullscale.io. Go check out what we do and go to qroom.biz too. We do different stuff. So it's funny. Sometimes people are like, did I listen to your podcast today and your competitor was on? I was like, even if you did, even if it was a competitor, it doesn't matter. There's so much meat on that bone. It's not a big deal. But, getting out there and doing it. And another thing, too, is like, and that's what both of our businesses are about, like being your technical partner in many ways. And Marcelo, much like myself, has worked with a ton of different businesses, which means you get kind of either a bird's eye or a front row or sometimes just a general view of the things that they do well, the things that they don't do well. And you get a lot of inside track. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's enabled us to have this remarkably high success rate with everyone we work out at Full Scale. And, you know, it's the same thing with you at Qroom. And, you know, the thing is, it's like, you got to learn from these things and figure out when, where, who, and get a good, technical partner, whether that's a technical co-founder, or maybe if you're technical, find someone like me. I'm a non-technical founder. Okay. I'm great at selling stuff. I'm a hype man. I'm the guy that gets out there and just beats on doors all day and talks about it all day. That's typically not the personality style that a developer has. Maybe they are, but it's rare, right? So that's fine. So you focus on that. I focus on this and we get moving. And another thing I'll tell you is, especially over this last 2 years, as opposed to the prior, investors don't like investing in solo founder companies. They really don't. That's a downgrade in your overall value proposition to investors. Why? Because if something happens to you or you fizzle out or whatever, well, there goes everything else. I refer to that as the bus rule. If you get hit by a bus, we're screwed. So, you know, you don't want to violate the bus rule, but yeah. So, okay. So I end my episodes of Startup Hustle, and I say my episodes, I'm not the only host of the show. If you listen regularly, you know that you can tune in on Tuesdays, learn all about e-commerce and Amazon brand acceleration from Marknology founder and CEO, Andrew Morgans. On Thursdays, we have a visit from Lauren Conaway, the founder and CEO of Innovator. She talks about all kinds of stuff. I don't even know how to to describe all the topics that she tunes in for. Also, Lauren and I have been listing a new city's top startups about once a month. I say about once a month because Marcelo here on Startup Hustle, much like startups, we usually don't hit the goal and the timeline because things take longer and cost more than we usually think they do. But here on my shows, we do the founders freestyle. And that's how we end our shows. I would like to hear, you know, I know we've already given it, but I'm going to go the other way. Usually we give the best advice. What's the one thing you should avoid the most? We're going to turn this around today. My kids have been doing mixed match day. It's like the opposite day. So like, we're going to go with the one thing you don't want to do the most when it comes to an MVP, maybe your startup, all of it, but let's maybe MVP centric. What do you got?
Whoa. That is a curveball.
I know. Did you just go through like a mental list? Was it like when Neo got plugged into the Matrix and then New Kung Fu? You're like, I just saw 10,000 things. Which one?
Because there's so many things to avoid in each area of what you're building of your MVP that sometimes selecting just one becomes a little bit problematic. But I think that I'm gonna go with what actually just happened in my mind. You have a list of things that you shouldn't do. I think that you don't need to get boggled with the many, many, many things that you don't need to do. What is your one priority? If you start anything without your one priority, you're bound to go somewhere else that you don't want to be. So whether it's your MVP, your company, your business, your tool selection, your co-founder selection, your venture capital selection, you need to always have the one thing that is non-negotiable. Start without that.
And don't get overwhelmed is what I heard. Also, exactly. Don't get overwhelmed. Yeah, yeah. There's always going to be something to do. I mean, it's never done. And that's, you know, you mentioned earlier, you were talking about Facebook and it made me think about The Social Network. And there's that one scene where Eduardo asks Zuckerberg, he's like, well, is it done? He's like, it's never going to be done. I'm going to use that your advice, and I'm going to parlay, and I'm going to say, don't overbuild, which is, you know, like is the thing that I think the reason an MVP even exists. Look, like I said, you're going to look back at it and you're going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe we released that. But you'll be happy that you got it out there. But don't overbuild, like meaning the same way as what Marcelo said, but a little twist. It's like, don't, you know, there's a zillion things that you can and may build later, but don't worry about them right now. You know, focus on doing one thing. You should be A+ at one thing before you're really like, I see founders make this mistake a lot, and I'll get a call sometimes and be like, hey man, can I run this by you? I'm trying to figure out why this isn't going the way I want. And I swear 95% of the time, it's because they're trying to be good at six things before they're good at one. And that's that overwhelming thing. Like there's this sea of check boxes that are always going to need to be finished. So if it doesn't gain you user, if it doesn't get you users, get you revenue, or keep the ones that you have, it shouldn't be a priority, especially in the beginning.
And is exactly, that fair? We can close the idea with the ego, right? It's like that one, you add more things to your MVP, the more that you feel that your MVP will not live up to what you are. And you're not your MVP. You're not your company. You're great.
Well, you're trying to build something bigger than yourself. It needs to be bigger than you. Like a company can't just be you. It has to be something that is way bigger than you if it's ever going to really, truly like be what most founders are trying to build. And that's the thing. So if you look at it, I ask myself a lot. I'm like, what does this need to do to be bigger than me? Like it can't just rely on me because I'm not always going to be here. That's the stark reality of it. So, you know, try to, you know, I think another thing too, and it's, you know, it's like we, and I'll kind of throw one more in here. I know we said one, but I want to go back. I just really think you nailed it right in the beginning of the show when you said the ego, like put it in check, like be open to the feedback. Don't argue with the people that are giving you feedback. That's not how that's designed. Listen to it. Accept it and make an improvement, or don't. It is what it is, but I see a lot of people trying to argue with those that are giving them feedback, and it's like they want to prove why they're right and the person giving feedback is wrong. That's the number one way to get people to not give you feedback, is to give them shit about the feedback that they give you. Be humble and thank them, because look, at this point, your product's probably pretty shitty. You shouldn't be pushing people out of it. Thank people for the feedback and take it into consideration. And with that, remember, you don't have to chase every single thing. Listen for the echo. Look for the things that people are asking for. By the way, it was my book author that taught me listen to the echo. That's actually a writing technique, because when you write an entire book, you know, 200-300 pages, it's easy. You have these verbal tics. We do it here on the show too. Sometimes I go back and re-listen to these, because you say things or do things that are repetitive and they really stand out. That being said, you know, was one of the things that my book editor like slapped out of me. He's like, you said this like 40 times in the book. So that's an echo. And that echo, well, here's the thing though, is an echo is a precursor to that repetitive loop of something that drives someone crazy. So there's a million reasons, and I didn't even share this. Rule one of building software for me is answering this question: is this annoying? And if the answer is not a definitive no, then you got to get back to the drawing board, because you can have the greatest thing in the world, but if it's annoying, people won't use it. So probably should have started the show with that. But for those that kept listening, there you go. There's a gem at the end. Marcelo, I got to get out of here, and I'm sure it's a beautiful day in Miami, so I don't want to keep you from the beach or whatever it is that you have planned for the rest of the day. Go to qroom.biz. There's a link in the show notes. Check out our new video series on the YouTube. Just go and type in Startup Hustle in the search bar. I'll see y'all down the road.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.